That was music by Georges Bizet, the Farandole from his L'Alsacienne Suite No. 2 in a performance here by the Montreal Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Charles Dutoit. Our program today is made possible with support from Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, working to ensure quality healthcare for everyone since 1977. Healthcare Consumers is a proud member of Community Shares of Illinois, a choice for payroll donations at work, on the web at cs-il.org. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana, NPR and classical music for Central Illinois. I'm Kevin Kelly. This program is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. And we'll be spending the hour today with Alistair Willis, who is the new music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in Springfield and Bloomington. Although he has done some early concerts, his official season starts Saturday with a concert at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield, and a repeat of that concert at 3 o'clock on Sunday at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. His inaugural subscription concerts as the music director, he was chosen during an exhaustive search, and during which last year we had a chance to meet him a couple of times, actually, as well as all of the other music director candidates as they each conducted the symphony orchestra and the chamber orchestra. And Alistair Willis came out the winner. He's going to be with us for the hour here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was the opening music, the theme from the Enigma Variations by Edward Elgar, in a performance here by the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Sir Colin Davis. This is one of the pieces that will be on the concerts this weekend by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in their 20th anniversary season, as the new music director Alistair Willis makes his debut. He's with us here on Live and Local. And thanks very much for driving over from, I guess you came over from Bloomington just now.
That's right.
And you're hopping back and forth between the two communities.
Yep.
We had a chance to talk the day it was announced in the spring that you were to be the new music director, which was fun. And we got a chance to talk earlier in the season, last season, which I certainly enjoyed. I always enjoy, as a sometime conductor myself, talking with other conductors. And I do remember that among the things we talked about was your status as sort of a perpetual guest conductor here, there, and everywhere. And the aside from your stint with as music director of a young orchestra, this is, I think, if I remember right, your first music directorship of a professional orchestra, even though you've conducted the Chicago Symphony, lots of other very big name orchestras. And one of the things I sort of wondered about in your own education, does anybody prepare you to be a music director of anything, really, when they're teaching you as well how to conduct?
Well, let me say the learning curve has been very steep since I've been here, and thrilled to have this as my first professional music director gig. You're absolutely right with that. And just is been a wonderful start to my time here, and looking forward to the concerts this weekend, which of course aren't just my first of my opening of the season. It's the 20th anniversary, as you said, of the Illinois Symphony, so it's much to celebrate this weekend.
And but the idea of what one learns in school, essentially. I mean, you're out of school for some time now, to say the least.
I'll always be learning, though.
Yeah, always learning.
Hopefully there's the variety. No, but you're right. Sorry, I forgot that. The schools, the conservatories, the music colleges used to just churn out conductors and players who were proficient in their instrument. But that, of course, over the years has changed. It's not enough to do that. And I was kind of, I think when I was studying at Rice University, this is when the revolution was starting. And so this was 96 to 99. I did my master's at Rice University in Houston. They wouldn't let me do my master's.
I'm sure they would not.
And so we would take lessons, for example, there and also at Aspen and at Tanglewood, where I was a fellow in two consecutive summers, to learn about the business. We'd have executive directors come and chat with us. We'd meet with librarians for figuring out what a music librarian of an orchestra did and how that affects us. And we'd think about programming. We'd think about soloists. We'd think about budgets. My goodness, budgets? You know, that we didn't know anything about that. We were learning scores. Surely the conducting world and the music world is just showing up at a rehearsal and giving a performance. But life has changed. And so not only is that happening more and more today, but also for musicians as well as conductors to... And I think the main reason is to, in order to reach out more to our communities. It's not enough just to play it and they will come. We have to make our performances more engaging, invite our public in, make music and events that are irresistible and are worthy of people's time, which is so precious these days.
You know, Alistair, you have given me a marvelous segue to our other topic of the hour, which is actually has a lot to do with budgets and providing irresistible music, we hope, conversations. This wasn't where I was going to go just yet, but you handed it off. So we're going to take the opportunity. I'm sharing the studio not only with Alistair Willis, the music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, but also with Mark Leonard, who is the general manager here at WILL, who is acutely aware of budgets, income from all kinds of sources, lack of income or decreasing income from many of those sources, and the importance to maintain our most important source of income, which, of course, is from you, our listeners. This is the second day of our fall pledge period. And so it's important that we take the opportunity, when it's handed to us, to ask you for your contributions, and that's today's one of those days. Apparently, we've had a lot of people, my colleague Vic DiGeronimo had a lot of people call in during his show, partly, I guess, because we were giving away an Apple iPad. I don't have an iPad to give away during this program, so we have only the benefit of the show itself, and hopefully those of you listening have realized the benefits over the years we've been doing the program, and especially in this new time slot for just a couple of months now. I don't even know if it's been a couple of months. And so we do ask you for your financial support to help us balance those budgets for the coming fiscal year. You can make your contribution by calling 217-244-0025 or by contributing online at willpledge.org. Thanks, Mark, for joining us on the show today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Yeah, I'm sitting here smiling slightly as you're describing the business side of the music world, the conducting world. Increasingly, it isn't just about the music. It's about the presentation and adapting and taking care of all of the pieces that make up an orchestra as well as make up a public radio station. This particular program, I'm very proud of because it is not just about presenting a radio program. The goal of the program, at least as I understand it from what Kevin has described and what he's built in this program, is something that also contributes to the health of the local arts and performing arts community, that many arts organizations and many music organizations are very, 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 very fragile. We share that. Obviously, we've gone through some tough economic times, and the budgets for a lot of organizations are limited or fragile or declining, and this is one way that we can put a bit of a spotlight on our local performing arts community and hopefully help to promote the health of the organizations throughout our region. So if you enjoy it, that's wonderful. But if it also helps to build your awareness of the cultural richness of our area and perhaps leads you to support or attend other performances, so much the better, because that is one of our aspirations for this show. It does take money to produce this and the other shows that you listen to on WILL, and that is what a membership drive is all about, is just gently reminding that it is a non-commercial service. In fact, commercial radio has pretty much abandoned the classical music format, except a handful of major market stations, and even that, I think, is down into one hand at this point. It's become a province of non-commercial public radio, and that is because we are not selling advertising. We don't have to have gross rating points. What we have to have is a appreciative audience that is also willing to support the service, and that's why we're asking for your call of support this afternoon at 217-244-0025. Pick a level and sign on as someone who wants to participate in the health of the music and performing arts community in our region.
WILL, and specifically Live and Local, help you to make connections with in a number of different ways, with artists like Alistair Willis, with artists like we'll be hearing later on in the week performing live in our studio of several different types of music. We have some Irish music on, tomorrow, and then we have some music of a genre I can't even describe that we'll find out about on Thursday. Folks will be performing live in our studio in advance of their performing live in our area. We help you make those connections between yourself as potential audience member for a live performance and the artists themselves, such as the Illinois Symphony. Bring you all together, put you in the same room eventually if you choose to go hear the concerts. And if you don't or are not able to go hear the concerts, you at least get to explore what it's like to be an artist in many of these types of genres through the conversations that they have on Live and Local. And if that is something that you do appreciate, and perhaps you have made some of those connections yourself, gone to hear performances, see performances that you wouldn't otherwise have done if you hadn't heard of them on Live and Local, then we hope that you will consider giving generously to this station so that we can continue helping you to make those connections in the future. The phone number is 217-244-0025, or the web address where you can contribute online very quickly is willpledge.org.
And we never ask you to give a certain amount. All we ask you to do is to consider how much enjoyment that WILL brings to you and what fits into your budget. We've got thank you gifts at a lot of different levels, but the thank you gift is really the bonus. That's just something kind of fun that we can do on the side, much like the iPad is, just to break this up and perhaps put a little whimsy in. The main reason you're giving is that it's a service, that it's important to you, and that you want to make sure is here for years and years to come. So make that investment this afternoon, and perhaps even talk about becoming a sustaining member. We can explain how you can make sure that you are always paid in full and up to date with your membership when you become a sustaining member of your public radio station.
A sustaining member is somebody who contributes regularly through payroll deduction or something of
it's,
that sort.
Exactly. If you intend to never let your membership lapse, then what you can do is become a permanent member, a sustaining member, where, in effect, you are automatically renewed year to year and the funds are automatically transferred either through payroll deduction or through an electronic transfer with your bank account. A lot of our members are happy to be able to do that and save the cost of reminder notices and perhaps even missing copies of the Patterns magazine because they inadvertently lapse. A lot of our members say, I don't want to ever cancel my membership. I want to always be a member of WILL. Well, if so, sustaining membership is an easy option we can arrange for you.
And that can be explained by the person who answers the phone, or all that information is available for you online. The phone number, 217-244-0025. The web address, willpledge.org, willpledge.org. Coming back to my guest, who is Alistair Willis, music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, in his debut subscription concerts on Saturday and Sunday. And continuing with the notion of how one prepares to be a conductor, I didn't really give any introduction of you really, Alistair, other than to say that you've had lots of guest conducting positions, but you've also been associate conductor of the Seattle Symphony, which is one sort of position. You've been assistant conductor with the Cincinnati Symphony and Pops Orchestra, which is another sort of job, and music director as well of the Cincinnati Symphony Youth Orchestra, in addition to these guest conductor appearances with, four at least of the Big Five, as they used to be called, and maybe still are in the United States, the Chicago Symphony, the Philadelphia Orchestra, the New York Philharmonic, Well, the St. Louis Symphony didn't used to be in there, but might be considered now part of the, you know, Big Six or something like that. I don't know who says what about everybody now, as well as Detroit Symphony, Houston Symphony, Indianapolis Symphony, Oregon Symphony, et cetera, which is a whole nother kind of job. So you were talking a little bit about dealing with budgets, which typically one doesn't have to do in those other kinds of jobs, I don't think.
That's right.
Assistant conductor, associate conductor, guest conductor, certainly not.
Certainly not as a guest conductor, but working with the Seattle Symphony, I often had to represent Maestro Schwartz when he was out of town. So I was often asked to give talks to fund or campaign that we were looking for money from, or to volunteer groups, and this is all great experience. And also hearing him talk as well was fantastic.
This is Gerard Schwartz, who's
Gerard
music
Schwartz,
director.
Yes, that's right. Was
he is now done at
formally
Seattle,
yes. The right. Music director now is Ludovic Molo.
Oh, I missed that whole development somehow.
He's beginning his second year.
Oh, really?
As I begin my first year here in Illinois.
Well, let's. Take a break from the nitty-gritty of the business end of being a conductor and hear some more of this music that you'll be conducting on Saturday and Sunday from the wonderful Enigma Variations. We heard the very short theme on which all these variations are based. Which one did I cue up here? Now I've forgotten. Which was the little faster one we were going to do?
The RBT.
RBT. Well,
Variation 3.
So you have to explain RBT. And well, all of these have initials.
Yes.
Nearly all of them have initials.
This piece is dedicated to the friends pictured within, but he makes us do the work. He doesn't actually spell out any of the names. He actually spells out a couple of them, but not all of them. He tends to usually just give initials. And RBT stands for Richard Baxter Townsend. And, of course, he was a friend. There are no enemies of Elgar's in this piece. And as we're going to hear, he was a bit eccentric, was Richard. He was the oldest of all of his friends pictured within in this piece, Enigma Variations. And he was 52 years old. And he's a sort of a skittish, whimsical sort of person. If you think maybe Mr. Bean, Rowan Atkinson, this is the sort of guy who is being now described musically by Elgar. And one of the most memorable things about Richard was that he owned a tricycle. How many friends do you know who owned tricycles who were 52 years old? And he would ride it very fast. So this movement is in 3 beats to a bar, perhaps signifying the number of wheels on the tricycle.
So if you actually had been sitting in the studio with me right here, with Mark and me, and you would have seen Alistair Willis virtually riding that tricycle, or at least talking about the moments where you could imagine this Mr. Bean-type character. This is from the Enigma Variations of Edward Elgar. And I had not heard that little tricycle bit, you know, about that particular movement, which actually gives me a chance to say a little additional about Alistair Willis. You would assume from his accent that he was born in England or somewhere in the United Kingdom. In fact, he was born in Acton, Massachusetts, lived with his family in Moscow for 5 years, but eventually did settle with them in England, in Surrey. Got his undergraduate degree there, continued studies in there as well, and then came over to the States at some point, to Texas, as you said earlier, the School of Music there, working with Larry Ratcliffe. And I'm delighted to know that Professor Ratcliffe is covering some of the business side of things. But has that been a particularly or at all an awkward sort of thing for you to say or know that you were born here? Everybody assumes you're British, but for all intents and purposes, I suppose you are, having been raised there and so on.
Well, the first 5 years of my life were in Boston with my family, and age 5, we moved to Moscow. My dad was a journalist. And age 10, then, I went to the same school as my sisters, which was the same school that my mother had gone to when she was a girl. And so my formative years were in England, and I think the accent is here to stay for that.
Do you find yourself milking that?
It awfully depends where I am, of course. But sometimes in rehearsal, instead of rehearsal 14, I'll go rehearsal 14. It'll just sort of slip out a little bit here and there. So I've lived in America for the last 16 years, and so more than half of my life is spent in America, if you count the first 5 years of my life as well. And when I would go home to England, I would really, really try to sound British, but they'd always, "Oh, you sound so American." And when I'm over here, when I try to sound American, they just say I sound British. I mean, who knows where I'm from? But since I was born here, I have an American passport. I also have a British passport because Mum is English and Dad was Australian. I don't have an Australian passport. I could if I wanted to, apparently. But technically speaking, with the American and the English, I'm half and half. That's the technical.
And then when you were in Texas, you must have been something else entirely. I don't know. How do they exactly. Say that word down there?
I'm not sure.
I guess you'll find out. I mean, now that you're going to be perhaps even more involved with boards of directors, a board of directors at the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, I wonder if the stereotypical little old ladies of the board, which is perhaps an obsolete item these days, may parade the British guy, to their donors. And, you may get them some more money that way. I don't know.
If the accent helps, I'll keep it. But
if not.
But really, it's music is so universal that it's the music that will ultimately speak to us all and not really whoever's got the accent or wherever they're from, I think. And that's where our connections can really be made with what our musicians are doing on stage, what composers we are programming, and what sort of engaging music and experiences we're offering to our community.
This first concert, Saturday and Sunday, first subscription concert you're leading with the Illinois Symphony, of course, does have a piece from England on it. Well, was that coincidental?
Yes,
or intentional?
The whole exercise of programming, as well you know, is a fantastic affair. And this program was very carefully thought of with the help of the artistic committee and Trevor Orthman, the executive director. And so, I mean, what could I bring as my opening concert? We needed to have something festive. We needed to set a tone for the rest of the season, perhaps my tenure here. And I very much believed in having an American composer write a piece, have a commission, a brand new piece. And a friend of mine, Patrick Clark, has done that for us. I was offered the job in June, and so Patrick only had literally a couple of months to put something together, so he's put together a 5-minute opening fanfare, which is very tonal, very, very exciting. I would describe his style as very unique, but a cross between, let's say, Stravinsky, John Adams, and Aaron Copland. So it's going to be quite exciting, and it's only 5 minutes. With a bit more notice, I could have perhaps had a 20-minute piece from him, which I would have loved, but we'll save that for another time. And then, of course, I have a friend of mine coming to play the Gershwin piano concerto, William Wolfram. I think we'll hear a bit more from him later. So we've got an American first half, and Patrick is from near St. Louis, so he's almost local. And the Gershwin, of course, is one of those pieces that's so hard to program.
Piano concerto in F.
Yes, the Gershwin, not the Rhapsody in Blue, the piano concerto. They're quite different, even though they're both got a great solo piano part. But the piano concerto, is it a pops piece? Is it a serious piece? Where do you program it? And we've been given the perfect opportunity to program it at the opening celebration of our friendship concert, of our Come Celebrate With Us season of the Illinois Symphony. And it's going to end our first half with just the right sense of festivity. And it's the perfect piece for us. So that's my American half. And, of course, the English Elgar in the second half fulfills that role.
And here is one more variation from the English half, towards the very near the end, just about the end of Elgar's Enigma Variations. This variation does not have initials. It has asterisks in lieu of initials.
This is one of the mini enigmas within the Enigma Variation. We don't know exactly who this person was, but the music can give us some hint as to who it was. The thoughts out there over the years have been split between two people. The first, Lady Mary Ligon. And this lady took a trip to Australia, and back then how you got there was by boat. And we hear a little bit into this piece the timpani playing with wooden sticks as if to sound like a ship's motor. Above that, we hear a quote from Mendelssohn's, basically Elgar steals a melody from another composer, shock horror, of Mendelssohn's Calm Sea and a Prosperous Voyage. Famous overture, put that in there. So the person has to have some connection with a sea crossing. So that would clearly point to Lady Mary Ligon. However, early in his life, Elgar was engaged to a lady called Helen Weaver, who it didn't work out. They were engaged for about 18 months. Religious differences, I believe, were the main reason. And she also took a trip to Australasia, to New Zealand, actually, and that would have been by boat as well. So who knows who could have been? But the three asterisks, you know, point towards Lady Mary Ligon because there are three names of theirs. Helen Weaver, I don't know what her middle name is, and that's not published. So really, it's quite an incredible movement. And obviously, whoever this person was meant a great deal to Elgar. This music is very heartfelt and very beautifully composed. And at Elgar's funeral, the Nimrod variation and this variation, which we're about to hear, was played.
And this is played in this recording by the London Symphony Orchestra, led by Sir Colin Davis. It will be performed by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, of course, in the context of the complete Enigma Variations of Elgar. Saturday night at 7:30 at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield, and Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, under the directorship of music director Alistair Willis, my guest here on Live and Local. That's the next to last of the movements, the next to last variation from the Enigma Variations by Edward Elgar, the one that is designated without initials of anybody, simply three asterisks, and performed here by the London Symphony Orchestra led by Sir Colin Davis. It'll be on the program Saturday night in Springfield, Sunday afternoon in Bloomington by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, conducted by my guest on Live and Local today, the new music director of the orchestra, Alistair Willis. We'll be coming back to conversation with him in just a few minutes. Programs on our station today are made possible with support from Silver Creek in downtown Urbana, serving lunch and dinner every day with a brunch on Sunday. For 20 years, Silver Creek has been bringing to the table freshly baked artisan breads, prime steaks and chops, fresh fish and pasta dishes, and delightful pastries made by Silver Creek's pastry chef. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly, the host of the show, and I'm here not only to engage Mr. Willis in conversation, but also to encourage you to make your call of support right now during this Our Fall pledge period. You can do that by phoning 217-244-0025. We depend on you since we are a listener-supported local public radio station. It's your dollars that help support this station, as we celebrate actually 90 years of community service. That's quite a milestone, and of course we want to bring you another 90, 100, why not 200 years of service, but of course we'd have to take them 1 year at a time. In fact, increasingly, we almost feel like we take them 1 month at a time, although that certainly doesn't happen because we budget a full year at a time. So we're actually raising money now for the coming fiscal year, although Mark Leonard, who is our general manager and is with us in the station, is constantly sort of needing to juggle funds, as we often don't, in fact, know what's coming from some of those sources, except for our local listener support, once we start our fiscal year.
That's true, Kevin. It's the uncertainty that's most nerve-wracking. And if you had stable funding and you knew any given year how much you would have throughout the year that you could make programming decisions and purchases from, it would be probably pretty easy. But our experience has taught us that our funding goes up and down, whether it's from federal, state, university, or from even individual members, but that historically, when the other sources, governmental, have gone down, our members are the ones who have risen to the occasion and offset those reductions. And the last couple of years has been a little bit daunting, frankly, because we've suffered some consecutive years of decreases on the state and the university level. And as many people are aware, our federal funding is being challenged currently. The only thing that we can do is to put on the air the very best product that hopefully is serving the interests and needs of our community and do it in a way that is unique, and hope that will lead you, the listeners, to support the service. And that is basically the proposition that is in front of you. If you appreciate the fact that we are producing local content every single weekday that allows you to learn more about performers from our region and performing in our region, and perhaps learn a little bit more about sometimes the backstory on the music industry as you are today, then you really owe it to yourself to support this program with a call of support at 244-0025. Now, I know I always underestimate because time goes more rapidly than I can imagine. I think this is a third anniversary year or fourth anniversary year for Live and Local.
You know, I've lost track of that myself. Well, let's do the math. We started... Am I really going to forget when this show started? I think it was I know it was on Groundhog Day.
What was it?
It was. February 2nd of 2009.
And it's been repeating ever since.
Yeah, exactly. February 2nd of 2009. That was our first year. So we're in the fourth year, I guess, right?
It still feels...
10, 11, 12. Yeah, this is our fourth
it's
year.
It's funny, and maybe there is some meaning to this. It still feels new, and maybe that's because every program is a little bit of a surprise, a little bit of a discovery. I mean, there are certain things that you wouldn't bring on your show, I'm sure. But in terms of the range of types of music and types of performers, you've really pushed the boundaries, I would say. Wouldn't you agree, Kevin?
Well, yeah. I mean, and even sometimes we'll have something on the show that I didn't think if I'd have thought about it really hard, I wouldn't have had on, like a musical about the film, recreating the film Reefer Madness, such as we had on the show yesterday. I'm glad we had it on. I didn't really think about it all that far ahead, except that it seemed like it would be fun and funny, and it seems to be a very funny show. And with any luck, for the sake of a Charleston Alley Theater, we got some people to go out to their show because that's what they wanted. And, of course, I thought it was a fun topic. A little awkward to do on a pledge show, but nonetheless. For me it's fresh because I'm always discovering music I never heard of before and rediscovering music that I have heard of before, such as the Elgar Enigma Variations. Alistair was telling me stories as many times as I've – telling us stories as many times as I've read program notes about the piece, which I've never conducted myself. Those are both stories, all three of those stories, that I hadn't actually heard, especially the tricycle one, having to do with the earlier variation. So, yeah, it's a discovery for me. I hope it's a welcome discovery for our listeners. It should not be a discovery for our listeners, however, that we do need to support the program and that we do need your help in supporting it. Please make your contribution now during our fall pledge period. The phone number is 217-244-0025, or you can give online right now on our website, which is willpledge.org, willpledge.org. We're going to make a little bit of a tangent in our conversation with Alistair Willis, who's music director of the Illinois Symphony, as they prepare to give concerts this weekend, to an experience that you had. I actually don't know the year when you did this recording, but there are a couple of recordings people can find with you conducting on the Naxos label, one of which is especially delightful, one that people will know more likely, which is you have a recording of Amahl and the Night Visitors, that wonderful perennial Christmas classic by Giancarlo Menotti, little opera. This one is another sort of opera by Maurice Ravel, which most people probably don't even know he wrote an opera, and it's a children's opera as well. I'll let you pronounce it and say what it means. And how did you get involved in this recording process?
Oh, gosh.
Recording project, excuse me.
It's L'Enfant et les Sortilèges, which translates as The Child and the Enchantments. And it's one of Ravel's most beloved operas. And it came to me one of those chance situations, under not the greatest situation, as you'll hear. I was down to guest conduct the Nashville Symphony, and they were building a new hall for their music director, Kenneth Schermerhorn, who unfortunately passed on unexpectedly. And so, as you can imagine, a music director does all the recordings with his or her orchestra. And since he was now no longer in the picture, my guest conducting engagement turned into also a recording engagement, where we recorded the two operas that we were performing in concert versions of them, the Menotti and the Ravel. And it was just a wonderful opportunity for me. I'm so grateful to everyone there, the team at Naxos and at the Nashville Symphony. And it was just a wonderful experience, and to get recognized as well. It was the disc was Grammy nominated for Best Classical Recording in 2009.
Of the Ravel,
yes.
Really? Fantastic.
Yeah. So, a huge honor.
So, the process of recording it then was, well, the first part of the process, I guess you weren't even involved in. You were handed the opportunity.
But then
you had to learn this music, I imagine, quite quickly.
I had about 8-9 months to notice to do these two pieces, and I'd never done either of them before. Oh, excuse me, I'd done bits of the Menotti before, but I'd never done the Ravel. And fortunately, I did some good research and went to see a couple of productions and learned and spoke to the conductors and the singers at different places before I showed up in Nashville. So I did all my work as best I could and spoke to people who knew how it should go. But still, putting it together was one thing. And the feeling that you, when you arrive at an orchestra and you know you're going to make a recording at the end of the week, but before that you've got performances to give. I mean, the energy was just fantastic. And the brand new concert hall, it was, I think, the third month the concert hall had been open. So it was such a wonderful feeling of promise, despite the sadness of having just lost the Kenneth Schermerhorn.
Well, we're going to hear a couple of excerpts from here. So introduce us to the first one. This has to do with Mr. Arithmetic.
Right. Well, the general premise of the opera is about it's a child. It's not really a children's opera. It's very, very adult and full of incredible sophistication. But the main character is a child who is very naughty and very rebellious and is rude to his maman in French, and then wrecks the room, rips the wallpaper, carves his initials in the trees outside. He teases the cats. He rips up his school books, and one by one they all come to life and they gang up on him. And at the moment we're going to hear is Mr. Arithmetic, who is now in shreds, having existed only before in his imagination and the school arithmetic book, is now coming to life with the most ludicrous sums of, you know, 7 times 9 is 48, and if a train leaves the station at this time, what time is it going to arrive at? And all these incredible, it's all in French, but the recording we're going to hear, but it's just a spot of fun, but there's a message behind it. Mr. Arithmetic is trying to make a point. Don't be mean to your toys.
Especially not your math book.
Especially not your math book. Promine coule dans ce réservoir de 13 omnibus qui te tue une car à 20 minutes d'intervalle. Pâle, pâle, pâle. Une paysanne, sanne, 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 porte tous ses œufs au marché.
And there goes Mr. Arithmetic, and it sounds like the message ought to have been crystal clear to that little boy from the fierceness of that music. We have another excerpt. This is from Ravel's opera. I don't have the title in front of me, and I'm forgetting the complete name again.
L'Enfant et les Sortilèges.
There we go. Alistair Willis was conducting in that recording, the Nashville Symphony Orchestra, and the folks singing?
That was Philippe Castagnier.
in the role of Mr. Arithmetic. And this next segment, a couple of cats going on.
Yes, we have Ian Greenlaw, baritone, and Kirsten Gunnlaugsson, who also sings the mother on the Amal recording that we did, the Menotti recording of Amal and the Night Visitors. Whoa, that's more of a mouthful than the French for me.
Yes, exactly.
And here are the two cats trying to get their own back, ganging up against the kid, and this is quite fun.
So we assume that he probably has pulled their tails and abused them in other typical childlike ways.
Absolutely.
Well, I've got a couple of cats, and I guess I feel rather fortunate that they don't typically make noises like that. I think if I were a kid, I'd be probably scared into not pulling their tails anymore. Also, that was music by Maurice Ravel and performance by the Nashville Symphony Orchestra and soloists with under the baton of guest. He was a guest conductor at the time, ended up getting involved in this recording on the Naxos label. Alistair Willis, who is also my guest here on Live and Local, in advance of his performances this weekend, debut as the new music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. They're performing Saturday in Springfield and Sunday afternoon in Bloomington. And I'm Kevin Kelly, host of Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Our broadcast is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting community participation in the monthly Dance for People with Parkinson's class, meeting this month on Friday, October 19th at 10 a.m. in Krannert Center's Drama Rehearsal Room. For more information, call 217-333-6280 or visit krannertcenter.com. And we hope that you will consider right now calling this phone number, which is 217-244-0025. Why? So that you can make a contribution to support Live and Local. The show will return here in just a couple of minutes. But I want to welcome back General Manager here at the Illinois Public Media, Mark Leonard, who always has a very direct things to say about what's involved in running this place and why it is so important that we do have your support.
Well, that's a pretty lofty challenge, a direct thing. I guess I tend to speak from the heart. I was explaining to somebody earlier today that public media, I think, is something that is really essential. And I've worked in it most of my career. I have a fond attachment for it. But as I grow older and I look around the media landscape, I realize more and more that it is unique and there are not other services that would replace what it is that we do. And when we end up in a fund drive, it's a chance to kind of take stock as an employee of a station as well as a listener and say, you know what, I'm being forced to make a decision about value. And I cannot imagine, if you are a fan of music and a fan of, in particular, classical music, why you wouldn't be a supporter of this station, because it is a lifeline. It does not, you do not have access to other stations that provide this. Now, you would have recordings and you would have live performances, but I think what WILL is able to do in general and this program is able to do in particular is to participate in that richness of performers and institutions and organizations in a community that is very rich in arts and culture, and that we are contributing to that health in a meaningful way. That's why this program was created. It's something that I think for Kevin is a labor of love, because he not only works here, but he also participates in the local arts community, and he wanted to be able to do something in his professional work that also reflected his activities in the rest of the community. You understand the performers. You understand the challenges of a director of an arts organization. You understand the challenges of being a conductor. This is a program where all of that comes together, and whether you are a participant yourself as a performer or professional in the industry, or you are a participant as an audience member, this program is your place. It is your place for you to learn about, participate, and enjoy on a daily basis. It's a significant undertaking, and I hope that you feel that it is worthy of your support this afternoon. That's why we are taking a few minutes right now to interject these messages, with the hope that maybe you're a regular listener every day, but you have never really considered taking the additional step to becoming a supporter. And you would make our day this afternoon if you made that investment at 244-0025 or online at our website, which is willpledge.org.
Will Pledge. We hope you will pledge at willpledge.org or at the phone number. And Mark, you know, to be honest, I never quite put it together in the way that you just described, where I really am involved here and as conductor of a couple of different groups in the organization and the fundraising, and always trying to get audiences, and in the case of my work with the youth orchestra, trying to get kids to play in the orchestra. And it's all, you know, it's sort of endless cajoling of people in one way or another, and especially important right now,
and
encourage people to support financially.
It is a fragile ecosystem. And we don't say give money to us and not to those organizations. We say spread it around and support arts in general throughout Central Illinois.
But please don't forget us.
But do not forget us at the same time.
Especially right now during the drive.
That is correct.
217-244-0025 or online at willpledge.org. I'm going to introduce you musically to the soloist for Saturday and Sunday's concerts with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. His name is William Wolfram, and here he's playing a concert etude by Franz Liszt. And then I'll ask music director Alistair Willis to introduce him to you more personally. As pianist William Wolfram, playing music by Franz Liszt from his recording of quite a number of lovely etudes by Liszt on the Naxos label. He is going to be soloist Saturday and Sunday with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra in the Piano Concerto in F by George Gershwin, which, of course, music director Alistair Willis will be conducting. And Alistair, I understand from our conversation before we actually started the show that you've worked with him a number of times.
I have. He's proved to be a true friend over the years. We used to have the same manager, and we worked together, I think, the first time was eight, nine years ago. We've worked several times, and he comes to Seattle, where I live, to play in the Seattle Chamber Music Society once or twice a year. I always meet up with him and socialize, and I've met up with him and his wife and his daughters in New York, where he lives. And we worked together just recently in Nashville in July, and we performed the Emperor Concerto together, Beethoven.
And he's not won the big competitions, but he's been very close to winning some really big competitions. He's been a finalist in the Clyburn competition, was, I think, runner-up in the Tchaikovsky competition in Moscow, and some others. And I think he's actually coming to play with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra later in the season, if I'm remembering correctly.
I think that's right.
That's a while from now. And in fact, they're doing a music director search, but that's a whole other topic, which we dealt with last Friday. You went through that last year, and that's all done.
It was exhaustive, as you said earlier.
Exhaustive and probably exhausting.
Yes.
Both for those making the selection and for you, those of you who are going through it. So in this case, we have a soloist who you knew already. Mm-hmm. What are some other ways in which you go about deciding who do you want to work with as soloist with this orchestra? Or how have you decided this year?
Well, for this season, because I was offered the job in June, which is just a few months before the season started, a lot of the process was about who was available. Normally, an orchestra will have their season finalized December, January, February, and that's when everybody sort of does their bidding to the soloists, every orchestra does, and availability is a little bit better for us at that time. And I was thrilled that Bill was available for this opening concert this coming weekend. He's not only a great friend, but he's a terrific musician. We've done quite a few of the Beethovens together, and if you're sitting at the back of the hall, he kind of looks a bit like Beethoven when he walks out on stage. With he's got this look, and he plays Beethoven so well, so deeply, so heartfelt. And we're doing the Gershwin Piano Concerto this weekend, and I've not done this piece with him before, so this is going to be fresh and exciting for us. And he gets in a couple of days' time, and we're already exchanging ideas on Facebook and email, and talking about interpretation and things. And it's just so exciting when you can do this not only with a great soloist, but somebody who you know.
Well, that's something to explore perhaps next time. The new way of communicating with soloists when you only are going to have a rehearsal or two, Facebook and email, when formerly it was, you know, in the studio when or in a hall when you could, but otherwise by telephone and so on. Things progress in lots of different ways. Wish we had more time. This is what we have. Alistair Willis is music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, making his debut during their 20th season this weekend in the first subscription concerts of the year, Saturday night, 7:30 at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield, Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. It's been my pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure to be here.
And our program's made possible by The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana, with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, and classical music and more for Central Illinois. We are a listener-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, a member-supported service, and we encourage you, please, to make your contribution now. Become a member of WYLL or renew as a member of WYLL by calling this number, 217-244-0025, or making a secure pledge online at willpledge.org. All Things Considered begins in just a few moments. Here is a fragment of that piece that William Wolfram will be playing with the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Alistair Willis assures me it won't go quite this fast, but here's Earl Wilde and the Boston Pops with Arthur Fiedler.